And I know we've done that. If any other family members that are in the audience want to come forward and take a photo with us. If not, you can be shy, that's okay.
I got it.
Thank you.
Steven, I apologize. I have some school supplies for you as well. So. Thank you so much. Thank you. Good to see you. Always enjoy starting off a meeting that way. So next, that'll take us to a roll call where our city clerk, if you'd call the roll, please.
Councilmember Miller.
Here.
Councilmember Robert.
Here.
Councilmember Rushing.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
Here. So we do have a quorum and we'll continue. So that takes us to our closed session announcements, where I'll turn it over to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, to see if there's any closed session announcements this evening.
Thank you, Mayor. None this evening.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. So that takes us to our agenda review, where at this time the council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for changes from either staff or from the dais. Anybody have any changes they want to make to the agenda?
I do not.
Staff, any changes? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and accept a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Very good. We will proceed as published. So that takes us to our ceremonial calendar this evening, where so I was having a conversation with the city manager a couple days ago, and we had very few proclamations during the course of our pandemic, and we were going to make up for that partially this evening by having four proclamations on our ceremonial calendar this evening, all very worthy and all very looking forward to honoring each of the items on our ceremonial calendar this evening. So our first one is a proclamation for National Foster Care Month. So, and I've asked Councilmember Rushing to read this proclamation, and accepting it will be Matt Pennon. So, oh, there you are. Good, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A proclamation of the City of Grover Beach City Council proclaiming May as National Foster Care Month. Whereas the City of Grover Beach recognizes the importance of providing children safe, healthy, and loving homes when they are unable to remain in the home of their biological family, and whereas there are more than 430,000 children in the United States in foster care systems, and whereas there are more than 60,000 children in California in the foster care system, and whereas there are over 350 children, youth, and teenagers in the county of San Luis Obispo who are in the foster care system, and whereas to help these children have healthy, loving, and stable home environment where they can thrive and feel connected to a community that cares for them, and to support the resources, families, that provide these critical homes, the City of Grover Beach is acknowledging National Foster Care Month to raise awareness about the need for more resource family homes in our community for local children and join other organizations to celebrate resource families in our community. And whereas this effort, along with similar celebrations in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, will offer children the chance to live with healthy, loving, and stable resource families when they cannot live with their birth families, and encourage other dedicated individuals to make a powerful difference in the lives of a child through resource family care. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Grover Beach is proclaiming May 2020 as National Foster Care Month in the City of Grover Beach, and in so doing, urge all citizens to join in national effort to raise awareness about the importance of foster care and the resource of family care.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Rushing. So, Mr. Pennon, so thank you for joining us this evening. So if you feel free to make some comments, and then after that, we'll take a photo.
Sounds good. Thank you so very much. As you know, my name is Matt Pennon. I am here on behalf of the San Luis Obispo County Department of Social Services. I am their resource parent liaison. And just a few words to talk about National Foster Care Month. First, I'd like to thank the City Council of Grover Beach for presenting the Department of Social Services with this proclamation. During the month of May, we are incredibly proud to honor and highlight the work that our county's foster and adoptive families, as well as our staff and community partners that support these families. Foster care is an integral part of the continuum of care for children in foster care. On average, our department receives over 270 calls monthly. These reports are evaluated. They're triaged, responded to by staff of dedicated social workers who seek to work with families to stabilize and address safety concerns. However, if the children cannot remain safely in their home, they make the difficult decision to place them into foster care and in order to avoid further abuse. These children and their families receive services including mental health, treatment for addictions, parenting classes, services for their medical needs, and of course, a resource family who provides a stable home for the children to live in while their family works to address the concerns that brought their children into foster care and work towards reunification. At any given time, our agency has approximately 350 children, youth, and teens in care, and only 120 active resource family homes to care for these children. Our youth come into care through no fault of their own and are often victims of abuse, neglect, abandonment, and mental illness. Our agency is still dealing with the impacts of COVID-19 pandemic and its negative effect on our already strained number of existing resource family homes. Our need for resource homes is greater than ever. We are faced with a deficit in a magnitude that we haven't seen before. We are struggling to provide even the most basic resource families, matching them with children, and are often forced to place children in less than ideal foster placement, which leads to foster placement stability issues if the youth requires additional resources. Our hope in sharing this information today is to help bring more eyes to a very present crisis we are facing in our own backyard. Our goal is to recruit, train, and support the development of many more resource families within San Luis Obispo County. This will yield a greater opportunity for our department to place youth where they have the best opportunity to heal and thrive while in care. Each new resource family brings with it an opportunity to serve multiple youth in our county's care and also provide additional support to our existing resource families who have gone above and beyond serving our youth during this deficit. Thank you again for recognizing May as National Foster Care Month in San Luis Obispo County and the city of Grover Beach. If anyone is interested in learning more about how to help these youth in care, please visit our website, slowfostercare.com, or you can give us a call at 805-781-1075. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. So that number again was 805-781-1075, correct?
1705.
1705.
Yep. 805-781-1705.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
So thank you all.
Go ahead and let's come forward for a photo, if we would, please. Very good. Thank you. So next up is in our ceremonial calendar is a proclamation for World War II Commemoration Week. And I do want to say thank you to Councilmember Robert for his service and ask him to read that proclamation, please.
Certainly. Thank you, Mayor. Proclamation to the Grover Beach City Council in recognition of World War II Commemoration Week. Whereas in the months after the attack of Pearl Harbor, the advent of World War II dramatically and irrevocably transformed the county of San Luis Obispo and all of its population as the entire nation mobilized for war. And whereas Camp San Luis Obispo was activated by the Army in 1940, and during the war, the post served as a training base for 22,000 soldiers with 9 combat divisions training there that deployed both to European and the Pacific theaters of war, as well as 5,000 Marines. My By war end, in 1945, over 140,000 soldiers had prepared for war at Camp San Luis Obispo. And whereas Camp Roberts in northern San Luis Obispo County began its mission in March 1941, throughout World War II, Camp Roberts was the largest U.S. Army basic training installation in the nation. Over 436,000 troops were trained here, over 5% of the nation's entire army during the war. By 1944, this base reached its peak population of 45,000 troops, with thousands of these soldiers quartered in huge tent cities with 750-bed hospital, churches, warehouses, PXs, and other support facilities, many of which continue in use today. And whereas the last week of April 1942 held special significance in the history of each of the communities throughout the Central Coast, because on April 30th, the nation began the enforcement of Executive Order 9066 throughout the country. Japanese Americans were expelled from their homes and confined in internment camps for the duration of the conflict, many of them citizens of the United States. Whereas it is appropriate that the residents of the Central Coast set aside a week in April 2022 to reflect upon that time, only 80 years ago, where our community and our nation came together as one people to fight the common enemy of the Third Reich and Japanese imperialism. Excuse me. A time when we entered a war that ended not only with military victory, but with the establishment of institutions that fostered a peaceful world order, committed to human rights, democracy, and respect for national sovereignty and the common aspirations of humanity. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby proclaim the last week of April as World War II Commemoration Week, marking this week with free public events throughout the county to educate our citizens about the brave men and women who endured enormous sacrifices of their property, their liberty, and in many cases their lives to achieve victory in World War II and kindle the hopes of a lasting peace. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. So we do have Jim Gregory, who's here this evening to accept that proclamation. And Mr. Gregory, if you want to come forward, I can read a little bit of your bio. Mr. Gregory taught history and literature courses for over 30 years at Mission Prep and at his alma mater, Aurora Grande High School. And he was also Lucia Mars Teacher of the Year in 2010. And since his retirement, he has written 5 books on local history, 2 of them focused on World War II. One of them called World War II, Arroyo Grande, and the Central Coast Aviators in World War II, a nonfiction finalist in the 2019 National Indie Book Award. So very good, sir. Thank you. Jim is also the current president of the South County Historical Society and does live in Arroyo Grande. We won't hold that part against you. But we thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Robert. We have 3 events. They're all at 4 o'clock. They're all in the South County coming up in this commemoration week. Tomorrow at the Pismo Beach Lighthouse Suites, my friend Lieutenant Colonel Eric Brune will give a presentation on the 54th Coast Artillery, which was an all-black artillery regiment trained in North Carolina that manned 5-inch guns overlooking Shell Beach. They were here not to protect us so much as they were to protect the oil facilities. But there were some 400 men who lived in Shell Beach, who played baseball regularly with the Rio Grande Union High School, and in December of 1943 performed at a holiday concert over in the Monarch Butterfly Grove, where the Army rec camp once was, and demanded from the audience for no fewer than 3 encores. Tomorrow night, also at 4 p.m. at IOOF Hall, I'll be speaking about the impact of World War II on the South County. As the mayor mentioned, we were invaded. Camp San Luis Obispo was a city at the size of or bigger than San Luis Obispo during 1943. Hancock College was a Hancock College of Aeronautics. 8,000 Army Air Forces Aviation aviators went through primary flight school, including we just commemorated the Doolittle Raid on Tokyo in April of 1942. 5 Hancock graduates participated in that raid. The Santa Maria Army Airfield trained P-38 fighter pilots. There were at least 3 fatal crashes in the South County during that time, and flying was a dangerous business. And finally, Camp Cook, which is today's Vandenberg Space Force Base, was a base for training tankers who regularly came up Highway 101 and went on maneuvers with the soldiers from Camp San Luis Obispo. Also at 4 o'clock on Friday, Margaret Aked and I will be talking about Japanese Americans in our area during the war. Over 1,300 were evacuated on April 30th of 1942, over 200 of them from what is today the Paulding Middle School gym. The buses lined up right out in front, took them first into internment at the Tulare County Fairgrounds, where they slept in animal stalls. They were then moved in August to the Gila River Camp, where during the first month of their stay there, the temperature was at or above 109 degrees for 20 of the 30 days of their stay. Many of their young men would join the Army, especially in military intelligence. Three of them would be honored with Bronze Stars, including the pre-war editor of the Rio Grande High School newspaper, George Nakamura. 25 of the 58 members of the Rio Grande High School class of 1942 were Japanese Americans. Two more would receive Bronze Stars. Both of those young men would be killed in action. After the war, these folks would come home, about half of them would, and they would be proverbial pillars of the community, especially in youth sports. Little League, Babe Ruth, and a series of Rio Grande Union High School girls basketball coaches. So, Mr. Mayor and the Council, thank you for this recognition on this important anniversary, and I appreciate it. For more information, you can go to the History Center, slo.org, website, or to the South County Historical Society's Facebook page. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir. And that's the historycenterslo.org, correct?
Right.
Very good. Great. If you'd like to come forward, we'll take a photo with you with the proclamation. In keeping with our theme of proclamations, we do have a proclamation for National Arbor Day. So, and I've asked Councilmember Miller to read this one, and our Parks and Recreation Director, Ms. Kathy Petker, will be receiving that this evening.
All right. The proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council declaring April 29, 2022 as National Arbor Day. Whereas in 1872, J. Sterling Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for the planting of trees, and whereas this special day, the last Friday in April called National Arbor Day, was first observed with the planting of more than a million trees in Nebraska, and whereas Arbor Day is observed throughout the nation and the world, and whereas trees can reduce the erosion of our precious topsoil from wind and water, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clean the air, produce oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife. And whereas trees are a renewable resource, giving us paper, wood for our homes, fuel for our fires, and countless other wood products. And whereas trees in our city increase property values, enhance the economic vitality of business areas, and beautify our community. And whereas Grover Beach desires to continue its tree planting practices, and whereas the Grover Beach Parks and Recreation Department will conduct a celebration of the importance of trees on Arbor Day with activities to celebrate the importance of trees for the community and provide free tree saplings. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby officially proclaim April 29th, 2022 as National Arbor Day in Grover Beach and urges all citizens to support efforts to care for our trees and woodlands and to support our community tree program. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for reading that proclamation, and Ms. Petker. So what can you tell us about what's going to happen?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor and City Council members. Mm-hmm. We're very happy to be able to honor Arbor Day this Friday, April 29th at 16th Street Park. We're going to have lots of activities, crafts for kids, and we are going to be giving away 50 free tree saplings. So first come, first serve. Get there early, 3 o'clock. And we look forward to having the community there and celebrating trees in our city. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. And that's Friday at 3 o'clock.
Yes.
Great.
16th Street Park.
16th Street Park. Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Would you like a photo?
Yes, please.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that. Next up, we have our last proclamation of the evening, which is something we haven't done before. And I got a email a couple weeks ago and didn't realize they even had Municipal Clerk Week. So, but with that, I'd like to ask our Mayor Pro Tem Bright to read the proclamation in honor of Municipal Clerk Week. And our accepting on tonight will be our City Clerk, Wendy Sims, and our Deputy City Clerk, Nicole Rotema.
Thank you. I'm pleased to do so. This proclamation is in recognition of the 53rd Annual Professional Municipal Clerks Week, May 1st through 7th, 2022. Whereas the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk, a time-honored and vital part of local government, exists throughout the world, and the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk is the oldest among public servants, the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk provides the professional link between the citizens, the local governing bodies, and agencies of government at other levels. And professional municipal clerks, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry, have pledged to be ever mindful of their neutrality and impartiality, rendering equal service to all. Whereas the professional municipal clerk serves as the information center on functions of local government and community, whereas professional municipal clerks continually strive to improve the administration of the affairs of the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk through participation in education programs, seminars, workshops, and the annual meetings of their state, provincial, county, and international professional organizations. It is most appropriate that we recognize the accomplishments of the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council recognize the week of May 1st through May 7th, 2022, as Professional Municipal Clerks Week, and further extend appreciation to our City Clerk, Wendy Sims, and Deputy City Clerk, Nicole Rentana, and to all professional municipal clerks for the vital services they perform and their exemplary dedication to the communities they represent.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor and Council. We greatly appreciate the recognition for National Professional Municipal Clerk Week. It is our honor and privilege to support such an esteemed council, great commissions, a wonderful Grover Beach community, and of course be a part of an amazing city staff team. So thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you both for your hours and hours and years of service on behalf of the city. We very much thank you. And would you like a photo? We're going to.
Yes, they would.
Okay, so does anyone have any comments on the proclamations this evening? Start to my left. To my right.
Well, I do want to thank our clerks, because they are so incredibly helpful. If I don't know where to go or what to do, that's who I ask. Mm-hmm. And they're just a plethora of information. Mm-hmm. So you're very much appreciated.
Ditto.
I'll echo those comments as well, and thank the other folks who are here to receive their proclamations for service to our community.
Absolutely.
Very good. Well put. So so that will take us to our presentations this evening, where I would like to do an introduction of Tripeppy Smith as our city communication consultants, and I'll turn it over to our city manager, Mr. Bronson, to do the introductions, if you would please.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. It's my honor to introduce a firm that is helping the city in communicating with our public about city events, services, projects, and just helping to keep our community informed. I'm honored to present Tripeppy Smith, who is a communications and marketing company that assists local governments around the state of California. I'm honored to introduce Ryder Smith, Sydney Overly, and Allison Torres, who are representatives of the firm and work with us very closely on a regular basis. They're in town for a meeting with city staff tomorrow. We have a quarterly communications planning meeting, and given that they're in town for the first time in 2 years since COVID, I wanted to bring them by to introduce them to the council, because they're really a key part of how we are telling our story of how we're informing the community, which has been a council goal for many years. And Ryder, if you wanted to take a moment and just say a few words on behalf of the firm.
You know me well enough to know I never miss a chance to grab a microphone, Matt. So. First of all, I just want to say it's a tremendous pleasure to get to work with the city council here and with your city staff, especially. Matt has some legacy and heritage as a PIO and has always been a connoisseur of the communication space and community engagement space. It's one of his many strong traits as a city manager. And so it was really exciting for us to get a chance to work with him when he comes from that perspective. And I appreciate City Council's investment in kind of community engagement and transparency. It's for the benefit of the city at large. We've worked on a lot of really important initiatives with you all, from sales tax measure, voter outreach and education, to your district formation process. So for that, we are particularly appreciative. And then my final comment I'll just say is we don't seem to invest enough in civic education in our high schools these days. And one of the consequences of having many years of not doing that is sometimes I feel like our job that we perform here in conjunction with city staff is kind of closing that gap on civics education for the public at large, that they understand enough about what's going on at City Hall that they can be active contributors to helping build stronger communities. And so we appreciate the role we get to play working with city staff to help achieve that goal.
Very good. Definitely appreciate those comments. Let's see if there's any questions to my right or comments.
No? Thank you.
No questions. Thank you.
Any questions or comments to my left?
No, thank you.
I got to say something, I suppose.
I came all this way.
There's a mic here for me, too. I apologize. So I just want to say thank you to you and your team. You are our voice where we can't speak constantly, so I do appreciate it. You have helped us immensely over the last couple of years, and I look forward to seeing what we can communicate in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll say thank you as well. And then also to your point, your comment about civic education is I know we're going to be doing what we're calling a Grover Beach 101 upcoming in May. And I know you've been working with city staff to try and craft how that is going to be presented to the community. And we look forward to having everybody involved, or as many people in the community come forward, learn what your city does do, what your city doesn't do, and what the difference is and how you can become involved in volunteering. So thank you for your professional work in helping us to craft that message, and for your team as well. So, and I was talking to Mr. Smith before the meeting, and happened to mention our Buy Local program, and he goes, "Oh yes, we helped with that with getting the message out with that." So they're planning to spend at least $100 in any number of stores throughout the city.
We're over halfway there already.
Very good.
You only have a few more days.
We're going fast. Trust me, I can spend money very quick. Ask my CFO.
Nice. So, Mr. Smith, I wasn't sure if there was anything else you wanted to add.
No,
or if any
I'll stop
team
before
members.
Matt yanks me. Team, you good? Thank you for the opportunity. We look forward to spending a couple of days here in Grover Beach.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate
Thank
that.
You. Thank you.
Would you like a photo?
Yes. I'll take it.
Very good. So Great. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate that. So that'll take us to our public communications tonight, where we, during this time, the council will allow public comment with additional communication, if necessary, after our regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. We will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So I did have a quick question for Ms. Jeffries before we start with our public comment to see if she wanted to speak under public comments or under the legislative update. Very good. Okay, great. Then I will recognize, first of all, our District 3 Supervisor, Ms. Dawn Ortiz-Legg, to come forward and provide public comment. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. I am the Supervisor, Dawn Ortiz-Legg, and I just wanted to stop in. Now I see your secret recipe here. But it was really great to have an opportunity because I haven't been here since council opened the chambers with the ending of COVID, so to speak. And so I really wanted to come in. And, you know, I think that, one, I wanted to recognize what a fantastic city council you are and city government. I think that we all watch and are amazed at how much you're accomplishing. And with that, you know, the fact that you're wanting to be partners with us at the county. And last week at the county, we did make some moves on our homeless situation. And I know that is particularly one of the crises that you didn't mention, Jeff, but certainly is, Mayor Lee, but it certainly is a crisis at this point. And I just wanted to note that things aren't happening fast enough. We realize that, but I think from last week's initiative and the things that we passed as a board 5-0, that you're going to see things happen quicker and faster. And so with that, I'll just say I'm here to congratulate you for your successes and for your smart wisdom, for your investments, and for wanting to continue to be partners. And I'm happy to be your partner at the county among our staff and all. So with that, just a lot of gratitude. Thank you.
Very good. And before you do wander away, so if someone did need to reach you, Madam
Thank
Supervisor,
you.
How would they reach you?
Yeah, I would think that easiest for them would be the phone number, which is at 805-781-4336. Thanks for letting me say that, because it's really true. We did do a lot of business last week at the board in regards to homelessness. So if there's questions that anybody has, be happy to take a phone call. Again, it's 805-781-4336.
Very
Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for your comments tonight. So next up, we do have Krista Jeffries.
Good evening, Council. Is this on? All right, I have a timer. Thank you for taking my comments. I came here tonight to ask you to either agendize an item or consider delegating one of your members to send a letter of support for a Senate bill that will facilitate more housing on campus at Cal Poly. And the reason I think this is important to Grover Beach is because SLO is the epicenter of our housing shortage in the county. And when the campus does not produce enough housing for its students, that puts pressure on SLO. When SLO does not put enough housing for their people, it puts pressure on Grover. And so I would consider it very pertinent to the problems that we're trying to solve here in the Central Coast to facilitate more housing on Cal Poly's campus. It's a pretty simple bill. There's exemptions for housing that's going to be on, you know, wetlands or historic sites, all of the normal exemptions. But what the bill would do is exempt campus housing from CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, for anybody who doesn't know what that means. And so it would save a lot of money, it would save a lot of time, and allow more housing to be on campus for so kids can just walk to school, or it could be for faculty as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be for students. So anybody who the university allows to live on campus, it would be up to them. It just has to be on campus land. So it makes a lot of sense to me. And if anybody has any questions, you can reach me on email. Thank you.
And quick question for you before you do leave. So do you have the bill number?
Senate Bill 886.
That was my question.
Very good.
And sorry, left that out.
Is it where does
I'm rusty at this in-person thing.
Where does it stand in the process?
It's going to the Environmental Quality Committee in the Senate on Wednesday morning. You can call into that committee and voice support. I can send you the instructions for that. It's pretty simple. You just dial a phone number and wait your turn. And then I don't know what committee comes after that, but the Environmental Quality Committee is the first, and that's Wednesday, this Wednesday morning. Anything else? Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. So next looks like Adam Huffman. They're quietly supporting you from from the seats. From behind.
Hello,
you.
Hello, City Council. Thank you for letting me speak this evening. The matter I want to discuss is really a Parks and Rec matter, but unfortunately I missed the meeting last Thursday. I'm here in support of the local tennis players of Grover Beach and the proposed pickleball court at Mentone Park. I know that there's other courts available, but I really think that the City Council should consider if there's a demand for pickleball to build a facility for pickleball players instead of encroaching on existing tennis courts. Even with many courts in the area on Saturdays and Sundays, my wife and I will go around and can't get a court on a Saturday or Sunday morning, spend like 90 minutes going around trying to get a tennis court. And I have no problem with pickleball, but I just think that if it's that popular, that the city should put money towards building their own facilities, like I know Morro Bay and other cities have done. I know that the net at Mentone could be replaced, and the court at Hero Park could probably be resurfaced. So there's other places where the budget could go to help tennis. And yeah, I'm expecting my first daughter this summer, and I just want there to be courts for her to play. And there's no scholarships for pickleball that I'm aware of currently. So yeah, I don't know if anybody else would to speak up for tennis players. So that's what I'm here to do. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman, and congratulations on the impending birth.
Future tennis star. Or pickleball star.
Very good. So let us see if there's anyone else in the chamber that wants to come forward and speak under public comment.
Hey, familiar face. I would like to thank you for getting your speed sign up that we talked about last time I was in. You guys have done a great job, Mayor, City Council members, and the staff also, from Matt getting the parts in, obviously, since we have a supply shortage going on in the world. And the maintenance crew for installing it and getting it done very quickly. Also, I would like to compliment, I think his name is Gabriel and Greg Ray, for their foresight on the layout on Oak Park. That has solved a lot of problems for people that live on the streets that merge there, because before you couldn't see. It was an accident. You were just sticking your nose out constantly. With one lane and the bicycle lane, it lets you ease out a little bit farther. It's a great design. That's all I have to say about that. And the next thing I'd like to say is as far as the gentleman's talking about the pickleball court, I know that there's a lot of neighborhood talk about it, and I think it would go over well. But I live next to the tennis courts, and I see when they're busy, but there's a lot of open space there, too. So it could be used for a while to check it out, see if it is as good as people think it is in the area, and then possibly put it in the little blank spot there. Kathy's been doing a great job with organizing everything there, so that wouldn't be a problem, I don't think. Other than that, I would really like for that 40% of traffic on 16th Street to move back to Oak Park. I really don't think it's going to, but we'll address that on another day. Thank you, and have a great day.
Very good. Thank you for those comments, Mr. Embry. So let's see if there's anyone else in the chamber that wants to speak under public comment tonight. Seeing no one else come forward, let me turn to our city clerk, see if anyone has called in at 805-321-6639 for public comment.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council. Let me turn to our city manager briefly. We had two commenters this evening speak of pickleball. And if you could just remind the council and the community what we did do as kind of a pilot project for pickleball at the Mentone Basin Courts, if you would please.
Yes, yes. Mr. Mayor, back in February, the council did approve a pilot program to co-locate a pickleball court on the existing Mentone Basin Park tennis court. This followed a January Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission recommendation to do this as well. The idea was to allow the court to be used for both sports, both tennis and pickleball, at different times, as a way of testing out the popularity of pickleball in our community, but to not take away from an existing court by virtue of restricting it for only one sport or the other. The commission and council did look at other court possibilities, including Grover Heights and Hero Park, and it was deemed that, Mentone Basin Park was the one to try it out at first. The pilot will be over a six-month period to be able to evaluate the use and see how this co-location concept will operate. And if there is interest in pickleball courts down the road, then certainly we can explore building a freestanding pickleball court at a later date. But that's a more expensive and longer-term proposition. This is just a way of testing this out in a co-located manner with tennis and pickleball together. There'll be certain hours where tennis can take place and pickleball, and we'll monitor that carefully to see how it goes.
Very good. And then, and I have to admit, I have not been by the Mentone courts to see how it's, they're interacting with each other. So, have we had good results, bad results? What's our initial initial assessment?
I'll say stay tuned because the pickleball court hasn't been installed just yet. It will be installed, I believe, this week, Kathy. Mm-hmm. So we'll get a chance to test out the pilot here very soon. We'll report back to the council and to the community on how it's going.
Very good. Thank you very much for that update, Mr. Huffman. So stay tuned. So please keep... public comment is closed, so go ahead and if you would relay it to Ms. Petker, and she'll make sure that we hear it. So, okay, very good. So I'm thinking Ms. Jeffrey's comments. I'd like to kind of talk a little bit more about that under our legislative update, if we're okay with that. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, and then just thank you to Supervisor Ortiz-Legg for her comments. Any other questions that you heard from public comment? Very good. Then that will take us to our consent agenda, where we do have a number of routine items that are listed for consideration as a group. The recommendations are listed on the agenda in parentheses, and we will give members of the public an opportunity to speak on the consent agenda by calling in at 805-321-6639 or coming forward in just a moment. But let me see if there's any members of the council who want to pull any consent items for either questions or comments. To my left?
No, Mr. Mayor.
To my right?
No, sir.
Any questions or clarifications from staff on consent? Very good. Then let's go ahead and open this up to the public. I will, again, allow folks to speak on any item on the consent agenda. Please come forward. Seeing no one come forward, let me turn to our city clerk, see if anyone has called in for public comment on the consent agenda.
No, there's no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. So I will go ahead and close public comment on the consent agenda, bring it back for consideration by the council.
Well, I'll move to accept and approve these consent agenda items as presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Looks like this does require a roll call vote. So, Madam City Clerk.
Councilmember Miller?
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing?
Yes.
Councilmember Robert?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
Yes. Very good. So we do have an approved consent agenda this evening. So, and that will take us to our public hearings, where we do have none this evening. And that takes us to our regular business items, where we will allow public comment on each item individually. If you would call in at 805-321-6639, or if you happen to be in the chambers, to fill out a blue speaker slip and go ahead and give it to one of our staff members. This item is number 10, which is our legislative update from the League of California Cities. Let's turn to our Deputy City Manager, Ms. Erickson, for the presentation.
Thank you. And their 2022 action agenda for the league
is to find funding for affordable housing and to look for reform in state laws to allow for more local control for housing policy, to seek investments in our critical infrastructure, to find additional funding for homelessness resources, and to strengthen our disaster preparedness and the impacts of climate change. And with that, I will turn it over to Dave Mullinex to give you an update on what's going on at the state level. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you very much, and pleasure to be here, Honorable Mayor and Council members. Nice to see some new faces and look forward to working with all of you in the future. You know, as Kristen pointed out, the League of California Cities, we've been around for a while, and we are kind of divided up into an educational arm, which we put on conferences, workshops, training sessions to help train and bring people, city staff and city elected officials up to date, bring them together also to share stories of how cities are meeting certain challenges, whether they're successful or what kind of challenges they've had. So whether it's staff or elected officials can share those stories and try to learn from each other and from around the state. A lot of cities have very similar types of issues they're dealing with all through the years, and it's always good to learn from other challenges and also be able to replicate the successes other cities have had as well. We also have an advocacy arm as well. Sacramento, usually every year, we have about 1,500 bills that come out of the legislature up in Sacramento, and each one of those bills has hopes and dreams of becoming a law. And about 500 of those bills impact local governments. And so what we have lobbyists up there in Sacramento in different policy areas, whether it's transportation, housing, governmental administrative services, housing, that kind of thing. And they prioritize the bills that are going to impact us here locally. And then I'm one of 15 regional managers around the state that tries to make sure I educate and get advocate for local governments and making sure elected officials and city staff are aware of what's going on up in Sacramento, and to make sure that we are effectively advocating to our legislators, whether it's assembly members or senators, and making sure that we're working in a coordinated and coherent fashion, whether it's writing letters, making visits here in the district, or going on up to Sacramento to meet with our legislators as well. We have a priority list of bills that we'll be working with this year. Right now, again, about 500 bills impacting local governments. We have what's known as a policy committees that are taking place this week. And about 50 or 60 people are in each policy committee. And again, it's like transportation, housing, community services, broken out in different policy areas. Elected officials and staff members from around the state, our lobbyists, introduce the bills, talk about the dynamics of the bills, who's for them, who's against them, and how we can, again, effectively advocate to the legislature and to the governor up there in Sacramento. Now, once those bills have made it through the policy committees, we get them prioritized, and then we try to make sure we have action alerts and action plans here at the local level. And so what I will be doing is reaching out to all of you after we go through this policy committee sessions this past week, and we'll be talking about how to best advocate for those bills that impact us, whether they're positive or negative. Usually they're negative, quite frankly, and we need to make sure that we are effectively fighting these bills and making sure that Sacramento understands the challenges that local governments have and our local communities have. Now, it's also up to us to make sure that it's always important for the elected officials to be on board, but it's much more effective when we work through all of you, the elected officials, and broaden the message out to our communities, whether it's your business community or other community leaders, to make sure that they're aware of these issues as well and have them to be working with us in a coordinated and coherent fashion, lobbying our elected officials up there in Sacramento. Because quite frankly, Sacramento has a bubble that is draped over the Capitol, and it's very hard to penetrate, you know, our messages and our challenges and our needs to the legislature, because they get caught up in their own business up there. And there's a string of restaurants and bars around the Capitol that most of the business is taking place right there. And so it's very, very challenging to penetrate that bubble, and it makes us have to work a little extra harder, especially at the grassroots level. But at the grassroots level, when we do have our, not just our council members and our elected officials, but our communities as a whole, when we all work together in a coordinated fashion, we can be very effective, and we have been very effective over the years. Now, we both work on legislation that comes out of each session, and there's also initiatives, statewide initiatives. Over the last 15 years, we've done 8 statewide initiatives, and we have won all of them. And again, it's one of those things, again, we'll come down into communities, make sure that your community is aware of the issues, aware of the challenges, aware of how they impact us here locally, and making sure your communities are aware whether it's a positive or a negative thing for us moving forward. And again, we have been very successful in running these initiatives as well. One of the things that we can do to make cities really effective, because a lot of times bills will come up and we need letters from the city of Grover Beach either supports or opposes a bill, and a lot of times we need very quick action on these bills, and that's where a legislative platform comes into play. And I know your assistant city manager has been working on that, and it creates a platform for you to make sure a letter gets generated in a timely fashion, because sometimes if a bill is up in committee and it needs quick action, whether it's a letter or a phone call or a visit, this issue might be done by the time the next council session is up. So we need a letter generated that falls within those parameters of what all of you say that fits for Grover Beach's needs and wants. Right now, up there, I thought I'd also give you a little flavor of what's going on up there in Sacramento and other things. You know, we have a governor who is the star of the show right now, and there is no other room in that spotlight for anyone else but the governor. And quite frankly, we have a legislature that has all 10 constitutional officers are Democrats, and we have 2/3 of all the elected officials up there that are more than 2/3 in both the Assembly and the Senate that are Democrats. Because of redistricting, this is going to be the first time our county here in San Luis Obispo will be an elected official that will be a Democrat. It doesn't matter where you fall on the political spectrum. The fact and the reality is it's probably going to be a positive thing to have a Democrat up there, because, quite frankly, the Republicans up there in Sacramento at this point are kind of irrelevant, because there's never a need for their vote up there, because the two-thirds of both – more than 2/3 in the Assembly and the Senate. So that's going to be a plus moving forward this next year. And we're also, we have a conference coming up here in a few weeks where we're going to be doing a couple of asks for the budget. Right now we're sitting on an unprecedented 40, it depends on who you listen to, legislative analysts or the governor's office, it's somewhere between 25 and a $40 billion surplus. And right now they're up there divvying it up as I speak. And we want to make sure that the needs of our local communities are met and try to get a share of that money to come down to our communities. Some of the things that we're going to be asking for is $500 million for to create what used to be known as redevelopment associations. They got eliminated out of spite, quite frankly. And it was the perfect private-public partnership to help create economic activity in our communities. There's things that are now known as EIFDs, Economic Infrastructure Financing District, Increment Financing Districts, that are existing, but there's no funding right now. We are going to be asking for $500 million to fund these type of programs when a community such as yours can get together with a neighboring community or the county, create these districts, and we can bring in funding for that so you can create maybe infrastructure to allow and to make private investment more palatable. So we're trying to make sure that, you know, local governments, the pressure up there right now is on homeless and housing, quite frankly. We want to make sure that you're also able to generate jobs and economic activity in order to support that housing as well. So we're going to be asking, we're going to be having a press conference up there in a couple of weeks at our conference. We're also going to be asking for, there's some mandates coming down as far as composting. And the mandates on the composting still very much up in the air, some of the details on how that's going to happen. There's a lot of meetings going on about that, but we're also asking for additional money to make sure cities have all the money they need for the planning and execution of those mandates as well. So what I would say is it's going to be in the next few weeks, it's the activity, the political activity is really going to be start ramping up. There's going to be a budget revise here in a few weeks by the governor. We want to make sure we get our message to the governor's office and to the legislature right now to make sure they understand our needs and our challenges. We also want to make sure our legislators understand that when they need our help, that we're there for them as well. And working with special districts and the county, local government, it's really about, you know, Sacramento can be a different world than local government, and we need to make sure that we're always communicating what we need to make our communities the best place and the quality of life that your constituents demand and want. So it's going to be a busy year. There's going to be an initiative also. It's could really revamp how local governments do business. It's an initiative that's backed by the California Business Roundtable. It's the title of the committee is called California Taxpayers for Governmental Accountability. Some of the provisions sound really good on the face of it, but really what it is, it's an initiative that is backed by five or six very wealthy developers down in L.A., and it's kind of that classic Goliath, David and Goliath story where they're looking to get exemptions and not do their fair share and foist a lot of responsibilities and tie the hands of local officials and local communities to make sure that they cannot meet the challenges, whether it's doing local tax measures, whether it's fees, whether it's penalties to bad actors in your community. It would open up a whole slew of litigation for your cities. It would make it almost impossible to raise fees and make it very challenging to do future revenue measures to meet your challenges like you guys did with your all the great roads you have right now. So again, it's going to be a busy year. I'm always available. I will be sending out some legislative updates here this week. We're also going to be talking about broadband. We have a webinar we'll be doing on broadband and the funding on broadband. And for the next several weeks, we're going to be making sure that cities know how to access that funding, how to prepare for the funding, whether it's for broadband, whether it's homeless money. There's a lot of money for homeless. Again, different categories as well. And there's also a bill that there's about $500 million available for local communities for bridge, whether it's bridge repair, bridge reinforcement, retrofitting, or building. Our community, our county has many cities. Your city maybe not as much. But so there's some very important bills, and we need to make sure that when the word comes out that we are engaged in the process and educated in the process, and again, making sure we're communicating in a coordinated fashion. And with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Molnix, for that presentation, that discussion. Let's before I turn to other council members, obviously, Ms. Jeffries had a comment on SB 886, so Cal Poly campus CEQA exemption. Are you familiar with that?
I am not familiar with the details of that, but I did write that bill down, and I'm going to call our lobbyists in the morning about that bill. Okay. And I will communicate to you and to Matt and Kristen on that.
Okay. Definitely appreciate that. So let's turn to my right, see if there's any questions for Mr. Molnix.
No questions. Thank you for the information.
Sure.
Very educational.
Yes, thank you. We really appreciate what you do. And can you get our redevelopment funds back?
We're working on it.
Working on it.
Thank you.
That's a very good program for the city. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Absolutely.
So, yep, let me see if there's questions to my left.
I do have a question. Mm-hmm. Mr. Molnix, actually I have two questions. First question is regarding the access to the list of priority bills and initiatives that you mentioned. How can people find that list?
We have a website, cacities.org, californiacities.org, cacities.org. And I will also be sending out in this next week the latest update after we go through our policy committees to make sure all of you council members are aware of those important issues as well. And please don't ever hesitate to text, call, email me if you have any questions.
Thank you. My second question is regarding outreach to outreach efforts to members of the public on how they can aid your efforts in getting bills and initiatives passed.
You know, it's a, you know, grassroots efforts. It's a lot of it is rolling up your sleeves, and whether it's coming to meetings like this, tomorrow I'm meeting at a Rotary in Pismo Beach. There are all types of meetings. I will always, whether I educate you and provide you information or join you in any presentations, I love to get out in our communities and talk about what's going on up in Sacramento. Sacramento can always use our help, and we need to make sure that we're there to help them.
Thank you.
Might turn into a two-part question, but we'll start with one.
That's fine.
Awesome. I think you'd mentioned that you are one of about 15 folks that do the work that you do within the state of California, yes?
Correct. We're broken up into divisions.
Okay.
And our division is the 25 cities in SLO, Santa Barbara, and Ventura County. 25 cities.
Perfect. That was part of that, too. And are each of the regions really responsible for the needs of those specific areas, or is it more of a broad scope of California needs?
Yes, we get the word from our board of directors up there in Sacramento that meet periodically, and they'll be meeting up there in a couple of weeks as well. They devise the priorities and the goals of our organization for the coming year, and then we break them down to the division level and the city level. And every division is differently. We do things differently. We also have division meetings, which I would encourage the new. I know you two have been there to many meetings, but we rotate around to each county. We'll have dinners on Fridays. We bring in speakers. We'll have virtual meetings now that Zoom's so popular as well. I think we'll have one with Mr. Smith as a speaker too, and a variety of subjects. Like we'll have our congressional member. We had the state treasurer last year. We have consultants from Sacramento. We have our lobbyists come in and talk about the bills that are important and allow the members to be able to ask questions directly to them as well, and to make sure that you're educated as much as possible and aware as much as possible and what kind of action steps we can take next to try to meet the challenges.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Did you just have one or two questions? So you had mentioned the redevelopment, I'll call it redevelopment light. So is that a initiative going through, or is that literally a bill that could reactivate that?
Well, you know what? There are two things. One's called an EIFD, and one's called a CREA, which is a community redevelopment investment agency. And they're both sitting there, but they don't have any funding. And what happened with the redevelopments is that when you created the redevelopment agency, the funding was created when there was economic activity within that district, and the additional tax increment that was generated went into that fund that allowed cities to create more infrastructure and to make investment more palatable in those areas. So we have the EIFDs and the CRA CREAs, but there's no money for them right now. And so we're trying to make sure that we have funding that comes in, and it will be, it'll be in the beginning what we need to start, we need to get it started. And what it is when communities, it'll be matching funds as well, but it'll be an annual source of money that cities can access to, again, to try to make our communities better.
Great.
And investment more palatable.
Definitely appreciate that clarification. So next question becomes, you mentioned composting, and my brain went to 1383.
Yes.
And its implementation of food waste management and so forth. Any opportunity that the state can put funding into composting so that cities and local jurisdictions don't get saddled with the ever-increasing cost of waste collection?
Yes. And, like a lot of these mandates, they love to give mandates to us, but they don't like to give us the tools and resources in order to, properly execute and implement those mandates. What we're going to be asking for is about $250 million this year to help get this program going. CalRecycle has been a little reluctant on some of the details on this program. There are still some things kind of up in the air, but we are... Our lobbyist is very much focused. Senator Laird was a key factor on that. We'll be visiting Senator Laird in a couple of weeks up there in Sacramento as well to make sure that he's supporting our efforts to try to – and that will be a budget ask as well, along with that, the redevelopment money.
Gotcha.
And, again, the budget – they've got a lot of money up there, and there's we need to make sure there's a line forming
to get that money.
And perhaps one last question, which has a very long line forming, has to do with homeless services and Project Home Key. Obviously, the city is trying to do our best to participate in compassionately addressing homelessness and homeless services. So what is the best way for us to position ourselves in partnership with either the county or Five Cities Homeless Coalition or other local partners to become Project Home Key eligible or some other programs that might be
Absolutely. Now there are committee meetings going on right now. Right now, the state, through the COVID period, through the ARP money, the American Recovery Act money that funneled down through California as well. Right now, the legislature is wondering, okay, what monies were successful, what monies were not successful, and what do we need to do in the future? They understand that this is the challenge of our moment right now. And there are cities that had never had to deal with this issue or having to deal with that issue right now. So there's still a lot of money up there. We are going to be visiting on that issue as well. We're going to be making budget ask as well. The division is going to be having webinars coming up in a couple of weeks with our lobbyists and a couple of for federal lobbyists as well on trying to access money so that our local cities and communities can have those resources in order to meet that challenge. So a lot is going to be happening in the next few months. And what our goal is and what our goal for our division and what our goal for the League of California Cities is to make sure that you all have the resources in order to meet those challenges.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Molnix.
Thank you very much. I look forward to working with all of you.
Very good. Appreciate that. So I am going to open this up to public comment. So if you would stick around for just a moment, see if there's any members of the public that do want to speak on this item, please come forward. Not seeing anybody come forward, let me turn to our city clerk and see if anyone has called in at 805-321-6639.
No, there's no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you very much. So my brain just momentarily thought I said that wrong, even though I've been said the number incorrectly, but I did say it correctly. So very good. So we'll go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council for any last questions or comments of Mr. Molnix.
No.
No, sir. Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure, and again, look forward to working with all of you.
Good. Appreciate that. And so before we do close this item, so this may help you in the future, but we probably don't have any specific questions. I'm going to turn to our city manager and our deputy city manager to see part of this presentation was about directive towards perhaps a legislative platform and providing input and direction to staff towards that end, and perhaps we might have a little bit of a discussion as to what staff's thought might be and see if it gels with council direction towards providing direction to the bubble that is Sacramento. So let me turn to Mr. Bronson first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And first, let me thank Mr. Molnix for being here this evening. It's been quite a while since we've had the Cal Cities report here at the council level, so we thought it was timely to provide this information, this update to the council, and we thank Mr. Molnix for all that he does here in the Town County's division. The division meetings that he spoke of are great opportunities for council members to interact with your colleagues from around the three-county region, and we look forward to re-engaging those in-person meetings here very, very shortly. So beyond the general update, staff does intend to go forward over the course of this calendar year on developing a legislative platform, which we haven't developed as a city. Quite frankly, we haven't done a whole lot organized in the legislative area because we haven't had the resources to really spend a whole lot of time at the staff level. But when you invest in resources, you invest in opportunities and capacity. And by having a deputy city manager now on board with us, we have some additional effort and capacity that can help us in being more proactive in the legislative arena. And so to that end, what staff is proposing is to come back to the council probably in the late summer and early fall on the outline of a legislative platform that would be developed and adopted at the end of this calendar year in preparation for the 2023 legislative session. We're midstream, probably even a little bit past that point right now. So I think from a staff's perspective, being able to develop a platform more formally later this year would be a timely endeavor for us to take on, as I said, as a city. We can still do case-by-case advocacy until that point as issues come forward to the council, but that we'd spend some focused time this fall on a platform that then would give us the ability to act very nimbly when bills came forward, when issues came forward, because you'd have legislative guidelines that would inform how the city could take positions on certain bills, on certain issues that came forward in either Sacramento or in Washington at the federal level. So staff would propose to bring back an item to the council to really identify some potential legislative platform ideas and guidance, and then have something for you to review from there.
Very good. Definitely appreciate that context. Let's see if that generated any questions or comments to my left.
No.
To my right.
Sir.
Very good. So maybe just perhaps one context to see if there's a consensus on the council is obviously we've worked under the presumption that cities can do anything. We can't do everything. And so I think from a legislative platform standpoint, I would agree that same thing holds true. And so from a legislative directive or legislative platform, I think my first approach from us as a city would be to take our city goals, major city goals, other city goals, and as resources permit, and kind of using those as the basis for the start of our legislative platform. So I think that gives staff good bills upon which to review based upon those goals, and then gives a very easy and manageable way that we're not getting into the weeds of an issue that may not be germane to Grover Beach. So does that resonate with everyone?
That yes. Makes sense. Thank you.
Definitely. Okay. So as a matter of fact, I sit on a couple of committees that I sit on. Yep. We have a legislative platform,
right.
And it really does streamline things.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Very good. So is that adequate direction for both of you, or do you need more meat on that bone?
I think that's a good starting point, and I think that does help that alignment between vision, goals, priorities, and implementation. So I think we could take that starting point and work on some further specificity and bring that back to the council at a later meeting and ultimately have a led platform that we can be proud of and help define what's important for us.
Very good. Appreciate that.
So. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Wanted to compliment you on your jacket this evening as well.
Thank you,
Mr. Molnix. So that does conclude work on item number 10. And that does take us to item 11, which is our fiscal year 22-23 budget update and our major city goals work program. So who's going to kick this one off? Ms. Purcell?
That will be me.
Very good. Our Administrative Services Director, Ms. Purcell.
Yes,
thank you.
So good evening, Mayor and Council. This will be a two-part presentation. I will be presenting the fiscal year 22-23 budget update, and then I will pass it along to our Deputy City Manager, Kristen Erickson, to discuss the major city goals work programs. So Council adopted a two-year budget in June of 2021, and believe it or not, we're almost done with the first year, and we're approaching the second year. So we are taking a very thorough review of the our current budget and our current actual expenditures through the third quarter and projecting them out to the year end, taking a look and comparing those with what we budgeted and adopted for fiscal year 22-23, and we're making additional adjustments as needed. So we started our budget update in February. We came to you with our general fund five-year forecast, and we were in a favorable position at that point with reserves over 25% council goal. We still feel like we're in a favorable position, but we know we have some short-term issues, such as our sluggish cannabis tax revenues that continue and our high inflation. I know I looked up the inflation rate for March, and we're at 8.5%, so that's a very high inflation rate right now. We're hoping that it comes down soon. So taking a look at our general fund revenues, we looked at we know our property or our taxes are about 75% of our total general fund revenues. So we took a really thorough look at that, and our property tax continues to do well. We're increasing that by $75,000 because the county has projected a 4% increase from the prior year. We also are increasing our sales tax by $354,000. So what happened there is when we did our two-year budget,
our sales tax consultant looked at the conservative projections, and now as we get closer to this next year, we look at the most likely number. So we were able to increase that by $354,000. As you know, our hotel tax is doing very well. People are out traveling again, and our short-term rentals are really helping us with that area. So we're increasing that by $250,000. And then we come to our cannabis tax. So it continues to be sluggish. We monitor it very carefully. We're noting, I think when we came to you in February, we thought we would end the year with $1.8 million. Now it's looking more like $1.6 million. So we budgeted $2.4 million. That's a decrease of about $800,000. So we use that as our base, our fiscal year 22. $1.6 million estimate for year-end, that's our base. So coming into fiscal year 22-23, we're reducing the cannabis tax revenue by $816,000. And then a couple other small areas. Our cannabis regulatory fee will be reduced by $5,000. We reduced some of our fees. Our audit fee, we won't be doing as many audits. Our live scan and background, we reduced that just to be closer to what we're actually bringing in. And then we have a $20,000 contribution for our summer concert, so that will be offset by some of our expenditures for the concerts. So going into fiscal year 22-23, we are reducing our original budget by almost $175,000. Looking at our general fund expenditures, that inflation factor is hitting us a little bit. So our salaries and benefits, we will be increasing that by $81,000. And really what that's due to is we used a 2% increase when we were doing the budget, and our labor negotiations, our adjustment, we agreed on a 3%. So that's what that mostly what that $81,000 is made up of. And then we for supplies and services, our total increase will be $128,000. And that will be made up of the PD body cameras. We came to it mid-year. We're adding those. And this is an annual number here. This $55,000 will cover the software and storage. And then vehicle fuel, as you know, the vehicle fuel costs are way up. So we've increased our budget to cover that by about $29,000. And that's mostly in PD and Public Works, because they do a lot of the driving. There's our summer concerts, the $20,000 contribution. That's the offset right there. We're adding $20,000 to the expenditure budget. And then we have some computer replacements. We have about a five-year replacement plan, and so we've added $14,000. There's a computer costs about $1,500, so that will replace about 9 computers. Our utility costs and other operating, such as supplies, advertising, and training, we've got some inflationary increases there. So total increase in our fiscal year 22-23 budgeted expenditures, total $209,000. Oops. So in summary, the first column is our original budget that was adopted last year, where we see an annual surplus of $487,000. The update that I just went through, where we are reducing revenues by $175,000 and increasing our expenditures by $209,000, will reduce our annual surplus by about $384,000. So the revised on the very far right hand column shows our annual surplus will be about $100,000. We came to it mid-year and we estimated that about $92,000, so we're right on track with what we had estimated during mid-year. But if you look at our bottom line percent of operating expenditures, we're at 39%, so we're at a very healthy reserve level. So I think we're still in very good shape, and we'll come back in June to give you our budget update and a public hearing. And with that, I will pass it on to Kristen Erickson.
Thank you, Deanne. Hello again, Council. So turning now to our Major City Goals Work Programs, as you know, in March of this year, we held our Council Goals Workshop to take a look at our fiscal year 21-23 City Council goals, and your Council did make some changes to those goals. We added water resiliency to our other important goals, and as well, in doing that, we moved pedestrian, bicycle, and traffic safety down into address as resources permit. And we also revised environmental stability as a goal to remove the Central Coast Blue Project and place that in the new water resiliency goal. However, your major city goals of economic development, housing and homelessness, public safety, and street improvements remain the same. And so our fiscal year 22-23 work programs are based on those same goals. So turning to our economic development work program, we are going to continue our partnership with the South County's Chambers of Commerce. That includes projects to do digital boot camps with slow partners, periodic roundtable meetings with various types of businesses in key sectors. We're also going to be continuing our efforts with Visit Grover Beach for tourism outreach, and they will also be helping us with a child care program that is going to be released next month using ARPA funding. We're also going to continue to promote the Digital West high-speed broadband access as it becomes accessible citywide in the next fiscal year. We're going to continue to support hotel projects that are coming on the way for the city, and of course continue to support the cannabis businesses and consumption lounges should your council approve those next month. Right now, what is budgeted in the fiscal year 22-23 program is $70,000 of ARPA funding, and that's to continue our contract with the chamber. For our housing and homelessness work program, staff plans to continue to work toward development of mixed-use sites on West Grand Avenue, also to assist with our pending affordable housing projects on South 13th Street and the newly acquired property on South 4th Street. We are, of course, going to do cleanups and outreach as necessary throughout the fiscal year, and we'll also be implementing the updated land use element and development codes to allow for hopefully more development and more housing options in the city. Staff also plans to apply for pro housing designation with the State Housing and Community Development Department. And right now in the fiscal year 22-23 budget, this work program has $400,000 of ARPA funding set aside for winter warming center for this year, next coming year, and homeless services in general. And moving on to our public safety work program, staff is going to continue exploring approaches for working with our homeless population. That includes looking at ways to deal with mental health issues in contact with police, and also expanding the community service technician program by reclassing a vacant position in the police department to add another community services technician and make greater use of non-sworn personnel in those situations. The Fife City Fire Authority will also be working with member agencies to determine the future of how we will deliver services and also governance structure for our emergency medical services. And there's also a planned update for our emergency operation plan. And for that, we have set aside in the budget $50,000 of a combination of nuclear power plant funding and general fund. And then finally, for our street improvements work program, of course, we will begin our West Grand Avenue streetscape project between 4th and 8th Streets. We will also continue Measure K-14 projects, which I now see are nearly impossible for you to see. But if you can see those little blue lines, those are the areas designated for K-14 projects in the coming year. And we will also be applying to PG&E for street lighting project on North Oak Park, which would be the first phase of street lighting improvements we hope to phase in. And the total budget for street improvements is about $5.865 million. Of that, $2 million will come from our general fund, and $3.2 million will be coming from Measure K-14 funds. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Deanne.
So the recommendation is to receive information on the fiscal year 22-23 budget update and draft work programs for the major city goals and provide input and direction to staff, or provide staff with alternate direction. And with that, we'll answer any questions or comments.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Purcell. Ms. Erickson, let's see if there's any questions to my right.
I have no questions, ma'am.
Yes, please. I have a couple.
Certainly.
Thank you. I'm not quite sure who will answer this, but the first is regarding the housing goal and the pro-housing designation. As I understand it, Sacramento was the first city that gained that designation this February with 60-plus points. And as I understand it, there's 30 points that minimum required. So I'm asking, does this appear doable for our city?
Yeah, I think Director Bruce Buckingham is on his way over to answer that question for you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Good evening, Bruce Buckingham, Community Development Director. Very good question. Don't really have an answer. We have preliminarily looked at the criteria. 30 points will not be easy, mm-hmm. and it may take other council actions. One of those, as a good example, would be updating our development impact fee so that fees are paid on square footage rather than on unit. So we'll be looking at that more closely, hence the reason I think we put it in June of 2023, because it may take some additional efforts and analysis to come to that conclusion. But the goal will obviously be to get to the 30 points.
Very good. I appreciate it. Thank you. And then regarding the public safety goal, there is coordination with other agencies and outreach to those in mental health issues. Are we talking something like the CAT or the crisis assistance team type of program? Or
I can take that one in lieu of the chiefs being here. The short answer is yes, potentially. We are looking at all different options. We know that mental health services is one of our most critical needs in this county. So many of our unhoused individuals do suffer from mental health issues, and the county is trying to do what it can, but there's a lot more that needs to be done. Our police chief has worked diligently with county mental health services, Five Cities Homeless Coalition, and other agencies. This is an effort to try to expand on that this next fiscal year, see what we can do locally. A CAT program, community action team, is a possibility. It can be expensive depending on the resources involved. So we'd like to learn more about this and see what's realistic for us in Grover Beach.
Thank you. That's really very promising and exciting. Thank you. And then my last question is regarding the street lighting application to PG&E. How long is that going to take, and are they going to fund the entire program, or is it matching, or do we pay it all?
I will defer to Public Works Director Greg Rades for that question.
Thank you. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Greg Rades, Public Works Director. So I'm not sure on the how long it will take once, you know, with it in PG&E's hands, but it is fully city funded.
Okay.
We pay PG&E for the design, ultimately the installation. So
they do the work, but we pay them to do it.
That's
much.
Correct.
Whenever they get to it, pretty much.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Certainly. Any questions to my left?
None for me.
Quick follow-up on the pro-housing designation. That was actually the beginning of my question as well, so thank you for asking that. I saw the benefits include extra assistance with securing state grants. Are those grants that are limited to cities that have that designation, or is it just easier to acquire those grants?
That's a good question. I'm not sure we can answer that this
okay.
evening. It's a really new designation that, to Mayor Pro Tem's point, not many communities around the state have applied for it, but given our pro-housing interest as a city, we'd like to learn as much as we can and see if it's valuable for us and if we qualify, and we'll bring back more information to council.
Okay, that works. Thank you.
Very good. I just had just one question, and probably for Mr. Bronson. So realizing that we've got our other important goals, and that now includes water resiliency and Central Coast Blue, it's kind of been a little quiet for a time, so I'm wondering if there's any updates that you can provide with respect to either the potential formation of the JPA, status of grants, and or the possibility of the joint meeting between the three cities, and if there isn't an update, then it would just be good to know where we stand.
Thank you. Just a general update. There's actually been a lot happening behind the scenes at the staff level and the consultant level over the last month or so. The technical work continues on the phase one of this critical water supply project. We are working on the development entitlement process for the facility, which will be located in Grover Beach. And so our planning commission and the council in general will have a chance to weigh in on the facility and how it looks, the overall design. Our staff team is working on that with our other partner agencies right now. We are working diligently on the funding applications for the different grant funding opportunities, as well as the state revolving loan funds that are also important for funding this project. And lastly, we are working towards the joint meeting. No date identified just yet, but that is something that is very much on our radar, and we'll look forward to convening this first ever joint city council meeting of the three cities on water resiliency.
Very good. Definitely appreciate that update and the fact that, that is going to kind of craft where I think our water resiliency continues over the course of the second year of this budget cycle and then future budget cycles as well. So that was the only specific question I had. So let me see if there's any members of the chamber that want to come forward and speak under public comment on this item. Seeing no one rush forward, I will go ahead and turn to our city clerk, see if anyone has called in at 805-321-6639 for public comment on this item.
No, there's no one on the line.
Very good. So I will go ahead and close public comment and turn back to Ms. Purcell, Ms. Erickson, or Mr. Bronson for closing comments before I turn to the council for closing comments.
I'll just close on behalf of our staff team. Our budget process is based on transparency to let the council and public know how we're doing over the course of the year, to give you real-time information, and this update is in that spirit tonight. We'll be coming to you with the formal budget hearing coming up on June 13th, but you now know the parameters of the budget that will be coming forward to you in the second year of our two-year cycle. We have a very strong financial management approach, and you see that in our numbers, in our reserves, in our diligence in making sure we manage the taxpayer money very efficiently and effectively in Grover Beach. And I'd like to thank our Admin Services Director, Deanne Purcell, for her diligence as our CFO, and thank Ms. Erickson for stepping into the work program process, and most of all, thank the Council for your leadership in financial stewardship for the organization.
Very good. Appreciate those comments. Let's see if there's any comments to my left.
I just want to thank Ms. Purcell for the report. Appreciate it.
I will echo those. Our budgeting process shows an incredible amount of detail and a conservative thought process that we are incredibly thankful for. Obviously, the deficits that we're seeing with our cannabis revenue was unexpected and possibly expected at the same time because of everything that happened with the amazing uptick that we had in 2020 and 2021. So I look forward to hopefully finding a new normal. Thank you.
Comments to my right.
Thank you so much for all your hard work. We appreciate it very much so. Thank you.
Yes, I echo all those comments. And as well as I just wanted to mention how pleased I am that we appropriately used or planned for the cannabis tax, knowing that it very well could fluctuate like it does. So I just want to thank you all for being cognizant of that and helping us through this mess. So thank you.
Thank you.
Very good, Jan. I'll echo those comments, and especially the ones of Mayor Pro Tem Bright, where we as a council and a city have really said cannabis taxes are not a stable funding source at the moment, so we're going to utilize those as one-time funds. And even though there's been some calls for them to be used in other fashions, I think we maintain the course, and this is exactly why we've done that. So appreciate that, and we'll look forward to the budget hearing in June.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. So that concludes work on item 11. So just let me turn to my right and left, make sure everybody's okay to continue. We're almost there, but just want to give a chance for a break if needed. So that takes us to item number 12, which is council compensation review and direction. I'll turn to our deputy city manager, Ms. Erickson, for the presentation.
Yeah, me again. Thank you for your patience. So at our last meeting, we were asked to agendize this topic and bring forth some recommendations or potential recommendations for increases to council compensation. Just a little background on that. For a good 32 years, council compensation stayed stable at $300 per month for both council members and the mayor, and that's the minimum established by state law there. But in December of 2017, the council did approve an increase, and that became effective in December of 2018. And so from that time until the present, council members have received a stipend of $600 per month and the mayor a stipend of $750 per month. some considerations that we need to consider as we go through this process. Anything that we do has to be adopted by ordinance with no automatic increases, meaning you can't work in an annual CPI to take effect. It would have to be each time changed by ordinance. Any changes for council members would be effective after the next municipal election. There is an attorney general opinion that says mayors, directly elected mayors, are not subject to that restriction. Additional amounts for a mayor, though, would have to also be adopted by ordinance if done separately. There we go. And the council stipend increases cannot be more than 5% each calendar year since the last raise, the operative date of the last raise in compensation. Any retirement or health benefits or reimbursement for direct expenses is not included in that calculation. However, were the city to pay any member to be on a council or commission, that amount would be included. So if we're looking at a comparison of our sister cities in the county, our city is similar or close to that of Atascadero, Arroyo Grande, and Paso Robles. However, Pismo, the city of San Luis Obispo, and starting in November of 2022, Morro Bay do offer larger stipends than does Grover Beach. We looked at the stipends. The maximum amount that you could increase your stipends at this point would be 20%. That's 5% over the 4 years. So that would be a council stipend of $720 per month and a mayor stipend of $900 per month, assuming you used the same formula for the mayor, although, again, that AG opinion indicates that we don't necessarily have to do so. But based on that formula and that scenario, we would estimate the total cost increase annually to be about $7,500 a year. Turning now to insurance benefits, on there you see an X. It means that it is offered, and a zero meaning it is not offered. You'll see that in this area we do kind of stand alone as the one city that does not offer any insurance benefits to its council members. The level of insurance varies from city to city for those that do offer insurance, and also it varies as much how many council members or mayors actually take advantage of those benefits if they are offered. And we would estimate insurance benefits are really difficult to estimate at this point, but looking at what the city contributes for employees, it's anywhere between $640 to $1,640, depending on which bargaining unit the employee is in and the level of coverage, meaning if it's only for themselves or for themselves, a spouse, and children. Council members and the mayor-elect coverage, we estimate it would be anywhere between $38,000, assuming every one of you elected to have the minimum insurance level, or up to almost $100,000 should everyone elect to have the maximum insurance levels. And then finally, we looked at council equipment benefits. A zero, again, indicates that there's no compensation. An X on this indicates that a device is directly provided, and then an S indicates a stipend or reimbursement for those related costs. We are in line with most cities, which do not offer any equipment benefits or reimbursements. However, we note that the cities of Pismo Beach and San Luis Obispo do offer either direct devices or stipends for cell phones, internet, and an overall stipend. Looking at that, we had our IT give an estimate. It looks like it would be around $2,000 a year for years in which device purchases would be made for those types of devices, and then a $500 annual for years in between device purchases just for maintenance and other fees related to that. Your council would also have, of course, the option of having a flat stipend as reimbursement for these types of costs. And so our recommendation today is to provide staff direction on whether you would like us to draft a change to the ordinance on council compensation, and that would include considerations for council members as well as for the mayor's compensation in the areas of a stipend, health benefits, or equipment allowances, or direct staff to not update the ordinance. And we would come back with, if you do decide to do an ordinance change, we would come back later in the year with that ordinance change. And and we are available for any questions you may have.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Erickson, for that presentation. Let's turn to Councilmember Miller first, because I know you had originally asked for consideration of this, so I will turn to you for questions first.
So to clarify, questions and not comments, correct?
Correct.
Okay,
yes.
No questions. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Any other questions to my left?
A couple. Just points of clarification, I suppose, regarding the benefits that other cities are receiving. It's my assumption that when, say, the mayor of Atascadero is no longer in office, the medical and additional benefits terminate the day he leaves office or she leaves office?
Yeah, generally the same. It would probably be the month ending, right?
After it's been
similar
paid,
to as employees. However, we would be responsible for administering COBRA if they elected to do that. That would be, of course, at the cost of the member or former member, but it would potentially be an administrative cost or staff resource cost for us to administer that.
Perfect. Thank you. And then I saw it in the notes. I just wanted to make sure that we all remember, too, that it is a 5% per year that's allowed, but we're not allowed to compile those or compound those on a year-to-year basis. So that, like, if we had taken 5% for the last 5 years or 4 years, the actual amount would be, I think, $729 and some cents, kind of a thing. But we have to, like, limit it to a straight-up 20% and not compound, right?
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
Very good. Questions to my right?
This is a council decision. It has nothing to do with the general public. It'd be nice to know what the general public thought, but that's not ever on a ballot or anything as far as compensation for city council.
Correct. It's not a ballot issue.
Okay.
I mean, the public arguably has notice of these meetings and could provide their comment and input at this meeting, but no, it would not be something that was put on the ballot.
Thank you.
Okay. I just have a question regarding insurance. How does the city deal with that with our part-time, or if we have any part-time employees?
We do have part-time employees. Currently, the city does not offer health benefits for our part-time employees, and we don't have any agreements that would offer that at this point.
Thank you.
Just to kind of build upon, I think Councilmember Robert, his question with respect to public comment. So this change would be an ordinance change. So there would be basically a notice as well as a full public hearing. So
Correct.
It would be on at least two more agendas if we decided to move forward with this. So that would give people an opportunity. Okay, great. Okay. Let's see if there is anyone out in the audience tonight that does want to speak on this item. I'll go ahead and open it up.
Okay.
So, seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and turn to our city clerk and see if anyone has called in on our call-in line for public comment on this item.
No, there's no one on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment for tonight, bring it back to the council for comments and direction. So now I'll turn to Councilmember Miller for comments.
Thank you, Mayor. So I brought this discussion forward because, as I mentioned prior, cost of living has increased significantly. And it's, as you can see from the presentation earlier, we're the only city that does not provide health, dental, vision, or life insurance coverage for council members. It's not really about any one of our individual circumstances. I think this is something that could entice or be a motivator for members, residents who are on the line about whether or not to run for city council in the future. As you know, we now have districting, which creates new landscape for us when we're campaigning. It's going to be more difficult to identify residents who have interest. And so I think this could be an incentive to get those people to come on board and take that leap. Additionally, let me check my notes. I had one more comment to make. I'm not advocating that we start providing medical coverage. That could be a larger impact to budget, but I am advocating for us to increase the stipend to council members and the mayor, as that's, as you can see, even if we agreed to the max of 20% for council members and perhaps a 20% increase for the mayor's stipend, it's a drop in the bucket in our overall budget, $7,500. So thank you for taking that into consideration.
Very good. So next I'll turn to Councilmember Rushing for any comments that he might have.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree with Councilmember Miller on the general enticement that, we have an opportunity to talk about right now with districting in place at this point. It could, in fact, I mean, we'll find out, I suppose, what the new landscape looks like, getting folks to, raise their hand and say, yes, I'd like to serve my city on the city council. I would say I'm not necessarily in favor of the insurance option. I think that's a very large pill for the city to take on at this point. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that a great number of our neighbors in Grover Beach don't have health insurance. And, you know, restaurant workers, lots of my friends that work full-time all the time that don't have health care, that would be amazing members of this table, of this dais. And if that was that little bit that pushed them over the edge to say, hey, you know what, this would actually help save my family at the same point, too. If there's a catastrophe, I'm going to still be able to pay my car insurance. I certainly would. I'm really interested to see what the rest of the council has to think about that. Like I said, I'm not necessarily advocating for the insurance option, but when I saw that all of the other cities had it and I started thinking about my neighbors and I started thinking about what the true carrot could be for bringing people into public service, into public action, that was, you know, an extra $120 a month is nice. But it's, and it could be a game changer for a lot of folks. I know that. But health insurance is a life changer for people. So I'll leave it at that one for now.
Very good. Comments? Councilmember Robert?
Councilmember Miller, I was confused. Are you advocating for health insurance or for not health insurance?
Initially, no. But okay. I think Councilmember Rushing makes a really good point. If we're looking to really incentivize people to step up and provide public service by serving on our council, I think that's a good incentive, because not all of us are retired and are at home all day. Some of us do work full time, and we've got child care expenses and gas and, you know, other living expenses that need to be considered. And so I think that is a good incentive.
Okay, I agree. I don't know that I want to incentivize people to run against me, though. But no, you're right.
For different districts.
We need people to want to serve the city, and some of that might be, as Councilman Rushing said, on the fence. You know, if I can get health insurance or a little bit more money, then I would definitely do it. But so I'm still thinking. Okay, thank you,
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. This has been a tough one for me. And it's just my own personal principle, I guess. It kind of goes along with picking your own districts, being able to raise our own salary. That just smacks funny with me. However, having said that, I do believe that it would be an incentive for others to, you know, throw their hat in the ring. When I first started, I worked full time. I had childcare, and we were getting $300 a month. And at that time, I believe somebody calculated we made like a nickel an hour. But I always thought, you know, you don't do this for the money, but we do need to make it where it is at least comparable to other cities. I think it's important that we consider ourselves just as important and vital to this community as other councils in this county. Regarding the insurance, I've always considered myself like a part-time employee. So that's why I asked that question. I think adding those bennies would impact our budget, of course, and staff greatly as well. So I don't know that I would, I mean, I understand the point, and it makes sense. However, at this point in time, I just can't see, I don't know, but, you know, I always keep an open mind. And regarding the equipment, we do have these tablets, but yes. You're meaning that they're not going to be replaced. That's not part of the, okay, very good. Okay, I think that's all for now. Thank you.
Very good. So, and I've always struggled with council compensation as well, especially since, like you said, we don't do it for the money. It basically either pays for gas, of course, then maybe Zoom expenses at some point over the course of the last 2 years. But so, and then obviously, as Councilmember Miller mentioned, the increase in the stipend could be absorbed into the existing budget, but there is a big pill to swallow for insurance benefits, which I think Councilmember Rushing mentioned. So in an effort to try and get us towards some direction to staff, let's see where kind of consensus is. I think I'm hearing consensus on advance a discussion at a minimum about increasing council compensation and having that discussion. Any disagreement? Are we all in? Looks like we're in consensus there. So,
and just to clarify, would that be for the maximum amount?
And that was what. Thank you for anticipating my next clarification. And that would be for the 20%. Anybody have any concerns over the 20%?
I just have a thought to share. So, yes, the max amount 20% for council members, and then with the mayor stipend, right now it's $150 more than the council amount. So that would be my recommendation, is to increase the mayor stipend by $150 over the council stipend rather than a 20%. But open to other opinions, of course.
So we've got 20% plus mayor, 150 over the new amount. So what amount would that be, Ms. Erickson? I don't remember the 20% plus.
Yes, I think it would be about 870 for the mayor then at that point.
Okay, so which would technically be less than the 20%, because I think the 20% was 920.
Yeah.
Okay, so you still propose the 150 in addition?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Any concerns on starting point from there?
Other than I do believe that if council's getting 20%, I think the mayor should.
I agree.
At the very least.
I agree.
I'd agree.
I can be open to that.
Okay. So I think from a directive standpoint, let's start there, and as we craft that ordinance, and we can always change that as it moves through the process if need be. So, okay. Council insurance benefits. So perhaps a question becomes is what is the threshold for benefits for part-time employees? Is it 20 hours? Is it 32 hours?
That I don't know, but I would guess it's 32, just based on the fact that we don't have any MOUs in place that designate otherwise.
Okay, very good. So from I know the city did a time card study of council in previous years. I don't recall any of us getting to that 32-hour threshold, but perhaps that is depending upon where the insurance benefits goes. Just a recollection is none of us would crack that threshold anything beyond a part-time employee. So is there a desire to talk about insurance benefits?
I have a question. Is it possible that there can be a contribution from the council member if they wanted benefits that wouldn't hit our budget too bad, so they could pay for some of the benefits?
Yeah, there are a lot of possibilities when it comes to insurance. If your council directs us tonight that you want to look at that, I would recommend that we come back on that issue alone before we came back with a draft ordinance. I think, yes, there are employees that contribute to their insurance. And what I showed you on the screen today, the amounts that I showed, include a contribution that the employee would pay. That was just what the city pays towards insurance for those various levels.
Because that could entice people, but also not damage our budget too bad. So being a veteran, I have full medical, but I don't have any dental or vision. So someone like me might, I could pay for some of the dental. It wouldn't hurt the city too bad.
Correct, yeah. Each individual member could determine whether they do or do not want to take advantage of each benefit. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Bronson.
Yeah, just to add to that, there are a lot of uncertainties around what the budgetary impact would be. We've presented some of the possibilities, but it really depends on who actually took the benefits, what plan they were on, whether they were all family or all individuals. So we're saying at the very, very extreme, so it's $100,000, but within that, there's probably 20 different variations depending on all the different factors, plus the timing of it. So while the stipend increase goes into effect automatically after the next election, the council would have complete discretion in identifying when the benefits would take place. So those could also take place in December or January of next year and defray a half year's worth of cost to the city. So just there's different ways to look at it, and as we brought this back to you, if that was the direction of the council, we could look at some different options to help provide some degree of budgetary certainty to defray potential expenses.
Okay. Appreciate that clarification. So let's see, Councilmember Robert, did that
yes.
Any questions beyond
no.
that?
Okay. No.
Very good.
No.
Mayor Pro Tem?
I have no questions. Okay. I would be open to, if it's not a whole lot of work, I'd certainly be open to seeing what those numbers look like.
Consensus to my left to look at the numbers?
Yes, I'd like to look at the numbers. I think, as mentioned by Council Member Rushing and then confirmed by Council Member Robert, it could be a great incentive for folks to want to join the council. So let's look at those numbers.
I'd agree.
So I think that's it's a worthwhile exercise. It'll be interesting to see perhaps if we could add a quick phone call, maybe not quick, but to some of our neighboring cities that do offer that and see what their average amounts are to see if the low end is $38,000 and it ends up being $5,000 because one person uses it type of thing, or if there's any cities that are utilizing that to its fullest, in which case then my biggest concern there is providing adequate direction for staff to be able to budget to these things, and perhaps a possibility there is even though the compensation would go in after November, perhaps the benefits would not get triggered until the following July 1st, which would give staff an opportunity to build it into the next budget opportunity or the next budget cycle, if that's could be part of our discussions. So, okay. Then fly on the wall thought or splatter paint thought is Councilmember Robert had mentioned the kind of the offsetting of the contributions. If someone did want to take no stipend but did want insurance coverage, is that an option, or is that something that would be an accounting nightmare?
Yeah. I'm not sure it's an accounting nightmare. I think there's nothing that says your council can't refuse the stipend. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we would want to consider that as a budgetary offset, however, because that obviously could change as council members and their circumstances do. But certainly that would be an option for you now. So.
Well, and perhaps I'm asking the question incorrectly. Well, yeah. It's more if we... as a city offered benefits, could instead of in lieu of council compensation, could I take that compensation and use it for my insurance benefits instead?
In lieu of the raise in compensation?
Or just in lieu of the monthly stipend as a council member. So basically, and I could choose either way.
So I suppose we could limit, I guess, is what you're saying, the insurance benefits to those council members that made that decision?
I kind of get the feeling Mr. Brunson is kind of looking inside my brain going, I don't know where you're going with this, which is okay, because...
I can see the interest in what you're articulating, and I think that that's a valid option on a discretionary basis. I think given that there is a structural governance component to the stipend as defined under the government code and our municipal code, I would suggest that keeping it consistent across the members of the city council would be the cleanest way of handling that. And then what a member does or does not do with that stipend is up to the individual based on their unique circumstances. Okay. And then the insurance issue can be a separate discretionary choice based on what the council thinks is appropriate in providing total compensation, so to speak, to the council members.
Gotcha. Okay. Very good. So let's see. So we've got consensus on the stipend amount. Is there consensus on, I think I heard consensus on having the insurance discussion, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Yeah. So that comes next to equipment. Any desire to have that included as part of this discussion?
No.
I don't think so. I think we're in alignment as far as equipment goes.
Okay. Very good. So no need to consider council equipment. For that. And let's see, is there any other talking points that we need to discuss?
I have one.
Or, yes, sir, Councilmember Robert.
I was under the impression at one point that we had citywide Wi-Fi, which we do not. But once we get it, I think it would be a benefit for the council to have that in the future. Sure, I'm sure we'll have it someday, right? The citywide. Or actually, I think you said it's kind of not very... what's the word, profitable for city to have that? So I don't know that we will have it.
Yeah, I'm not sure we have a plan for citywide Wi-Fi at this point. We mm-hmm. will have citywide fiber broadband that's wired for every household and business across the city over the next year.
But wireless? It's wired.
It's wired, correct. Wired, right. It's a fixed wired system that will be connected to each property in the city. As of now, we don't have a Wi-Fi plan. We'll probably look at that on a spot basis in certain areas.
Okay. I don't know if it's something to add into that conversation, that if we ever do get it, the council would have that as part of the package, because it wouldn't cost the city anything to add somebody on to that. Correct?
Again, the city doesn't really have its own separate network. It's right. A private network that is available to customers on an individual basis.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
So consensus to include or not include? I think I heard a general no on equipment, but there's a kind of a different thought from Councilmember Robert.
Yeah, I think we could probably address the Wi-Fi issue down the road. I think
yes.
Staff is suggesting that it's nowhere near the horizon at this
right,
point.
Right. I agree.
Okay.
It's a good idea, though.
Yeah. I think a part of a subsequent conversation.
Right.
Very good.
Different council, maybe.
Okay, so that I think covered all the items that I anticipated. Is there any other items that staff is looking for this item?
Yeah, just procedurally want to make sure we're on the same page as far as timing of what's going to happen next. We can bring the ordinance to you separate from the insurance conversation because that doesn't need to occur by ordinance. So we were going to plan to bring that back fairly quickly to your council, and then we'll have a more broad discussion on options for insurance and kind of where your council wants to go with that thereafter.
Very good. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Okay, so that concludes work on that item as well. So we do have another round of public communications. If there are members of the public that want to address the council, seeing no one come forward, I'll check one last time with our city clerk, see if anyone's on the line for public comment.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I'll close public comment, bring it back to the council members for committee reports. Let's start to my right with Council Member Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. Had one meet. I'm sorry. This is
council committee reports.
Yes. Okay. So you got the right thing. I had a meeting last week, the Integrated Waste Management Authority, on April 13th, where we received and filed expenses and credit card reports, went over those. We had a discussion on recycling policy F10 with a review of the amended item moved to the employee's handbook, and the staff was directed to prepare additional amendments as specified. I'll keep you updated when that happens. Status update on the ratification of the Joint Powers Agreement amendment and consideration of any proposed edits. Again, I'll have to keep you updated on that. Discussion of the fiscal 2022-23 budget review. There was also a request for proposal for professional services. A broad discussion and review at a list of contracts that were approved by the IWMA, including purchases of policies and provide direction on professional services, as well as a request for proposal as a deemed appropriate. And we also had a non-item discussion in regards to AB 1276, single-use foodware accessories and standard condiments. I'm sure, well, hopefully a lot of you are aware of it. Our governor had signed into law, I believe last November, that restaurants can no longer provide single-use foodware. Let me correct that. They can provide them, but they can't put them out or offer them. You have to request them. So, and actually that went into effect in January, and I noticed that restaurants pretty much ignore it. You go into most of your fast food restaurants and they have all that stuff still out there available for you, but they're supposed to have it behind the counter and you're supposed to ask for it, and they're no longer allowed to bundle them together. In other words, you know, the package you get with a fork and a knife, salt and pepper, napkin, they can't do that. It has to be single items. And we're just trying to reduce the plastic and waste going into the landfill and our oceans, so that I think this will help. The items are still available, but as I said, you have to request them. And there's really no enforcement, as we discussed during the meeting. WMA is certainly not an enforcement agency to go out and find them. I think most of it's going to be, as Matt, our city manager Madden mentioned, complaint-driven. So if you see a restaurant that's providing all that out there, straws, napkins, ketchup, I mean, there's quite a bit of it, then you can call, I guess, call Matt. See, there's no real enforcement for it. Sorry, Matt, don't call Matt. But they're still working that out. Hopefully most restaurants, some of them aren't even aware of it. They don't even know it exists, the law. So hopefully they'll figure this out and start doing what they're supposed to do. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, if we have future agenda items noted, management and budget reviews as regular, and budgets on May and June and September in our next meeting. That was it.
Thank you. Thank you for that report. Let's turn to our Mayor Pro Tem next.
Thank you. May I ask a question?
Of course.
Regarding that IWMA meeting, mm-hmm. And that last subject in particular.
Okay.
Are they intending to do any kind of outreach, do you know? I know that in the past they have sent
flyers.
Yes,
or what,
and actually sent people out into the field. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, no, there's none of that planned.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be hard to get them into compliance if they don't know that they're out of compliance.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the problem with the recycling. Most people are out of compliance, and they're not aware of it
either. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I had no committee reports, so I'll save the stuff for.
Very good.
Yeah.
Next, we'll check in with Councilmember Miller.
No committee reports, thank you.
And Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just checking in from the South County Chambers of Commerce. Two items today. I wanted to let the public know that the brand new launch pad in Grover Beach, our co-work facility, is getting up and running, and we have an official ribbon cutting coming up this Monday, May 2nd. Oh, sorry, yeah, that would be this Monday. That's a beautiful thing. From 12 p.m. to 2 p.m., you can learn learn more about the exciting opportunities that this space is going to provide by visiting southcountychambers.com. If you're interested in checking out the ribbon cutting, you can also RSVP there. But get about it. Our local food truck is going to be in attendance, along with a, I believe there's going to be an ice cream trolley. So we shall see. I know. It's pretty exciting there. Yes, it's very small, but it's full of ice cream. It's a beautiful thing. And then lastly, wanted to call out, it's my drum from the chamber, by local program. We already talked about it a little bit today, but it is wrapping up at the end of this month. For those of you that are unfamiliar with the program, spend $100 at a Grover Beach establishment, scan your receipts and provide them to the Chambers of Commerce, and they will get you a $25 gift card at one of, I think, over 35 different locations throughout the city of Grover Beach. That said, because we're in the last days of it, they are making it even more exciting. Not only $25, you'll get an extra $25. I don't know if you get to choose that second card or not, so it's sort of like a little roulette toss there. And that is all that I have from the chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Very good, certainly. And I had just one committee, and that was the Five Cities Fire Authority, and it is budget season time. So we did approve the budget. If you recall, Five Cities Fire Authority does have a requirement for a unanimous budget approval. And so that did come forward as recommended for approval. And the city manager is aware of the city's contribution for that Five Cities Fire Authority budget amount. But we should, as a city, just kind of be aware that that number is going to be changing no matter what happens with the June 7th ballot measure in Oceano. So we are in the third year of the third amendment, and so the Five Cities Fire Authority contributions have been flat for those last 3 years. Because of that and the rising fuel costs and the rising inflation and so forth, their reserves are down to approximately $150,000. So for next fiscal year. That doesn't take into account the possibility of a heavy fire season, but I don't think that's anything that the authority is really banking on, having a high fire season in order to build reserves. And so it is going to be a discussion that I'm sure the city manager, along with his counterparts in Rio Grande and Oceano, along with the fire chief, will need to take into consideration in the next budget cycle. So, but the chief did want to just kind of give the Five Cities Fire Authority Board, as well as each of the cities, kind of a heads up that if something does occur with respect to equipment and apparatus and so forth, that the reserves are on a very thin, razor-thin margin. So just kind of more of a heads up there. And question, sir?
Quick question, Mayor. You said that the Five Cities Fire Authority, if anticipated a high fire season, do they get more funding? Is that what happens?
They will be reimbursed for any calls that they go out on for both staffing as well as equipment usage.
But that's only if the weather permits.
Yeah, okay. And there is an expectation for a high fire season.
Sure.
The last 2 years have been, we'll say, fruitful from a revenue standpoint, but very unfruitful from a fire protection standpoint.
Yeah.
But the amount of money that came in from fire coverage that we got called on was well over $500,000 last year.
Yeah.
And so
I see. Okay. Thank you.
From that perspective. So I don't know if there was anything you wanted to add on to that, Mr. Bronson?
Just that the funding, governance, scope of services for fire and emergency medical services will be a major area of focus this next fiscal year.
Yep. Okay. Very good. Thank you for that, setting that expectation for this council and our partners in the Five Cities Fire Authority. So let's take that to Council Communications. And Mayor Pro Tem Bright, you had a couple, I think?
Oh, yes. Going back to having our supervisor here, I did go to that meeting to speak in support of the spending and strategic plan on homelessness that was being proposed to the county. I was so pleased to see that it was a 5-0. I mean, it was unanimous, which I don't think I've seen very often with this current yes, thank you, board. So anyway, that was really, really swell. So hopefully that is going to, well, make a transformational change in the approach to homelessness with a regional effort. That's what we're hoping for. And then last Thursday, thanks to Councilmember Rushing, I had the pleasure of attending the Boys and Girls Club Cookies and Kid event. And it was really swell. I didn't even know that facility existed. And anyway, it was great time. And Don Ortiz Legg was there as well, along with some other dignitaries from Santa Barbara County. So that's it. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. It's coming up to first Saturday, so I remind you that the Exploration Station Discovery Center at 867 North, no, it's not North, it's Ramona Avenue, is doing their electronic donations, so you can pick up a large smart TV, flat screen TV for $50, or a monitor for $25.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're warranted, so if it breaks down, come back and exchange it. You don't get your donation back, but you can get another.
Well, that's
good. Just keep coming back.
They have lots of them over there. And then on May 8th, Mother's Day, they're again this year, they're doing the Flowers for Mom. So on Sunday, they'll be open for you can purchase some flowers and give a donation for that for Mother's Day. And they're having ice cream also. So it'll be ice cream and flowers for Mom. And that was it. Now that's on, wait a minute, June 4th is the first Saturday for the electronics. And May 8th, is that right? No, wait. Yeah, no, May 8th was last month.
No,
it's this month. So then it would be May 7th is the first Saturday, right? Yeah, that's correct. Okay, figure out what day it is.
I know.
That's it. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I'm excited for the May 7th event.
We do.
Ice cream and flowers. I have nothing to report. Thank you.
Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just one thing tonight. Wanted to discuss Central Coast New Tech High School, their Direwolves. This coming Wednesday, April 27th, from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., their juniors will be hosting their sixth annual commodity night at Napomo High School's Olympic Hall. The event brings the junior class and their guests together to play an economic simulation game that you get to compete for a Jocko's gift card. The goal of the project is for students to understand how world events impact the prices of food. For this particular project, students focus on how world events affect commodities, but much of this is just logic that could be applied to just about any business as well. It is, however, imperative that you get there right at 6 o'clock or a little bit earlier because the game is time sensitive. But this is how it works. Everyone starts out with some Dire Wolf cash. Whoever is clever enough to determine how each of the simulated world events will impact the price of each commodity will be the winner. And if they use their cash wisely. Time for discussion on the commodity experts. The juniors will be built in to the beginning and end of the simulation, and there will be a prize for the top junior team playing the game. I hope to see some folks from Grover Beach out there. I know I'm going to be there right before 6 o'clock. I'm looking forward to seeing what the price of orange juice does next year.
What is the date again, please?
That's this coming Wednesday, April 27th.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
No reservations required. Just, you know, come on down.
Come on down and duke it out over commodities.
I'm just saying.
Just a couple of quick council communications on my part. I did have the pleasure of speaking with a Cal Poly research person regarding tobacco prevention strategies. They're doing a research project. If they haven't reached out to you already, they're planning to do that. It sounds like a grassroots effort to try and encourage increasing tobacco prevention strategies in communities. So, and then let's see. going along with Councilmember Robert, his first Sunday or first Monday is the Grange is coming back for their pancake breakfast on this upcoming Sunday.
Thank you, man.
So, and it is in person this time, if I recall. And
in
so,
person inside, yeah. We'll go back to the community event that it's been for however long, 30, 40 years. I know Anita's been serving coffee there for 37 years.
And she's not even that old.
No.
She must have been a baby.
No, we're very excited about that. Yes.
Will the drive-through option still be available or only?
We talked about that, and I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, because you can still get orders to go.
Okay.
But you have to go inside and
Thank
pay
you.
For it. Yeah, but no drive-through.
So, which means you have to go inside and get your picture taken with Cassie and Ann.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you don't get the picture, it didn't happen.
This is true. I've had a very ashamed Cassie on occasion in the fact that she forgot to take our picture. It's like, it didn't happen. But the pancakes were still good.
Yeah.
Anyway, just want to say a thank you to the Grover Beach Rotary for their completing the fence painting on this past Saturday. So I completely spaced out on it and decided to go to the five-year anniversary celebration for Perfetto Coffee. They had cake, so that won. And I didn't get black paint all over myself. We do have the mother-son dance coming up as well, so I don't know if there's any tickets that remain for that. I know that is a hot commodity. No pun intended, but I know Boots and Buddies is the theme this year. So check the city website and call Parks and Rec if you are in potential, if you don't have your tickets yet. So, and then just a quick question for Mr. Bronson, perhaps he can give an update in his city manager's report. This is the last week of our applications for our grants for nonprofits, I believe it is. So perhaps you can just kind of give a shout out for that program one last time in case anyone who hasn't already done so wants to include their name in the hat.
Yeah, I can take that one, Mayor. So, yes, we are doing a community grants program. We have up to $100,000 in grants to give away, up to $10,000 per business or per nonprofit. It is designed for nonprofits, so you have to be a 501c corporation to be eligible for the program. But we do hope to get more applications in, so you still have time until April 30th to get your application in, and it will be reviewed by a panel. We will let nominees know if they're going to be recommended to the council ahead of the council meeting on May 23rd when your council will make the awards.
Very good. Thank you for that update. So, and next I'll turn to Mr. Bronson for his reports and comments.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a few final items from my standpoint. First, just to underscore Councilmember Rushing's comments regarding Buy Local program, it's a great endeavor that's coming to a close at the end of this week, and the extra gift card will certainly be an enticement, along with the fact that every $100 submitted in receipts will generate one gift card. So if you submit $500 of receipts, you'll get 5 gift cards plus the extra bonus gift card for a total of 6. So this is a great opportunity to finish this program off with a very important note that helps to support our local businesses and support our economy here in Grover Beach. Just want to highlight that our Picnic in the Park event on April 15th was a big success. We drew nearly 60 people to Ramona Park for a fun evening event with a food truck, with kids' activities, bounce houses, games, good dialogue and communication, and neighbors, community members coming together and being able to share the park environment with each other. We'll have additional events coming up in the late spring and summertime. More information about the timing and dates to come. In addition to the Mentone Basin fence painting work last Saturday, we also hosted a skate contest at the skate park, sponsored by the YMCA, that drew about 20 attendees over the course of our afternoon, and great chance to highlight our skate park, which will be under renovation here very soon. With the council-approved project, we'll be increasing the concrete area and doing some other spruce-up improvements to the skate park as well. And lastly, as mentioned by one of the public speakers early on, we did install the digital speed sign on South 16th Street just last week. It was installed right between Seabright and Truebill Avenues as a way of identifying how fast folks are going, and if they happen to be going a bit over the speed limit, it flashes slow down to inform them of how fast they're going so that they will get back within speed limits as they go forward. So this is the first of several signs that we'll be adding or updating. Next one will come on the pike, and then we'll be replacing two existing signs on North Oak Park Boulevard once we get those in, hopefully by the end of this month. With that, I will yield the floor.
Very good. Thank you, sir, for those updates. Let me check in with our city attorney, see if he has any reports and comments this evening.
Thank you, Mayor, but none tonight.
Very good. Thank you for that. So I see we do not have a closed session tonight, so unless there's any last comments from the council. Seeing none, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.